All right. So in her book, Packing for Mars, Mary Roach shares that in the very first space station, the engineers realized that they weren't going to need tables. Because, I mean, no gravity means you couldn't sit down, and the food and the plates would be floating everywhere. It'd be a complete mess. So they decided clearly no tables needed. But then, after the first mission, the astronauts came back and told them they'd made a terrible mistake. It had been awful without tables, regardless of the whole gravity situation. They didn't like not being able to eat and gather together around a table as a group. Put straps on the tables, but don't skip them, they said. Without tables, they just didn't feel fully human. This is why I love Thanksgiving. Because it's a whole holiday about tables. Right? The whole practice is about sitting at tables and eating. A whole holiday. And the point is just to sit around a table and eat. And share and give thanks and eat some more. Be with people that you love, giving thanks. There's a bunch of readings as we get closer to Christmas about how much Christmas is needed in the world. I've preached on them. You've probably heard them. They talk about how we need hope in a struggling world or the light of a distant star. You've heard them, I'm sure. It's like, come, Christmas. But this year, I've been thinking that this year, how much we really need Thanksgiving. Because this year, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I've been feeling like everyone, everywhere, is in a really bad mood. Like the whole world has gone to a special place that my family growing up used to call Crank City. People are like unusually short-tempered, as if everyone is in that place where the next thing that goes wrong, whatever it is going to be the last straw, and they're really going to lose it. It's unusual to experience this here in our happy town. I think it has something to do with the growth we've experienced, the rising cost of living, the packed roads, the disappearing open space, and the ways that so many longtime residents have started moving out of town, retiring, or just simply finding a more affordable house in Loveland or in Windsor. I mean, it's not that far away, but it's like there's this cumulative grief or disorientation. Things are changing. But maybe even more, I've been feeling the impact of being in year two of this chaotic and often inhumane presidency and all the ripple effects. I mean, a year ago, we had this collective sense of shock, but also we shared this powerful desire and drive for resistance and organizing. A year later, we've realized what a long haul it all is, how deep the fractures are, how exhausting the daily shocks can be. I mean, how many times are we going to have to fight for the small scraps of a healthcare policy we have? And most of all, it's sinking in how some of our long-held practices of just powering through are not going to cut it if we're going to make it. We need Thanksgiving. We need a chance to sit together around a table and share the stories of our lives. We need to linger too long over the mashed potatoes while sharing stories of people who've had our backs, the places we've gone to feel better, or maybe even more, confessing the ones that didn't, and our struggle to find that sense of home. We need to pass the cranberries and the stuffing and feel ourselves sharing and giving, receiving and breathing, to find again this connecting thread of life in this dehumanizing time. We need to gather around a table and remember what it means to be human together. I confess this general bad mood state that I was kind of acting like it was everybody else a few moments ago was exactly where I was last Thursday. I was driving to Denver for a two-day training, and I was irritated that I'd be gone all day, actually 2 days, short-tempered at all the traffic. I mean, why is it stopping anyways? Why? What's even going on? I was cranky about time and how impossible it was feeling that I'd ever crack open this sermon on generosity that was quickly approaching, especially when I was going to be in a training for 2 whole days. How would it even be possible, I wondered, for people to feel generous right now? I mean, when the world is so freaking irritating. The training was actually something I'd been looking forward to for a long time. It was for progressive faith leaders on how to share our good news and the story of our work with the media. It was very timely. But you know how trainings go. You're kind of like happy if you get one small little bit of new info, or you feel affirmed at what you're already doing. So I figured best case, I could sneak in a little work, take in some of the training, you know, kind of multitask. Win-win. So I show up, go to the room, and right there in front of me is a big table. And around it, 30 progressive faith leaders from all across the Front Range. The task, the trainer told us for the day, and also as we thought about the media more generally, was to hear each other's story around the table and to know ourselves as partners in this work, to claim a collective story, which meant to start, they said, we need to turn off all tech so we could really be present. Right, multitasking was a no-go. And thank God. It didn't take long for the tightness in my gut to break loose. As each person shared about their work, the impact that their faith communities were having. But more than those powerful, positive stories, I have to say what really did it for me was their messes. See, they asked us to share, all of us, about our biggest failures and that shared vulnerability and the laughter. It became so generative, connective. Instead of depletion and defensiveness, I was suddenly feeling open, maybe even just a little bit generous. But it wasn't until the second day that I realized just how connected all of this was to the questions that I'd been struggling with around generosity, how to feel generous in these times. The teacher had us pair up and share our answers to those 4 questions that I had us explore earlier. And by the end, just like today, the whole room was filled with energy and joy. And suddenly it was easy to imagine how we would not just survive, but thrive together in these times. How we'd be okay. And even more, how we were already okay. Every person in the room and their communities are doing so much good in all sorts of areas, from reproductive justice to reentry after time in prison. Everything, all these communities, faith communities, are out there all across the Front Range with such brave leaders and brave communities just like ours, stepping up for justice, gathering around tables in places that make them and whole communities feel better, dancing and singing along to joyful music, and generously unleashing courageous love in all their own sorts of ways. It was glorious. And all this, of course, was already true before any of us showed up in the room all cranky and short-tempered. I was not the only one. But we'd been keeping it to ourselves, striving on our own, struggling with our heads down. It's funny how even the most miraculous thing can become mundane when you keep it to yourself. Like how you can get used to beauty so much that it's like, oh yeah, those mountains. I see them every day. It's like boring. So you can start to lose the sense of its impact. Can all just feel so limited, isolated, tenuous. But then someone asks you a question, asking you to tell them a story of hope in the community that you serve, a story of generosity, and you realize your only problem is figuring out which one to tell. Food bank? Or One Village, One Family? No, faith family, hospitality. Sanctuary. Climate justice. Our parish visitors and our caring team. Our small groups, our campus ministry, our relationships with our neighbors, or our partnerships with other organizations, or the way that a stranger told me recently that our church, by way of our signs out on Drake, had changed the whole city for the good. Suddenly, in our sharing, this precious jewel that we were each carrying just became clear, and the only thing that had been missing was the giving it away. And in that giving, I realized that it actually wasn't our story, just a Foothills story that I had to offer. And everyone else wasn't just offering their amazing stories. It was all of ours there in the room, our gifts, our treasures, already, because it was all part of this bigger story that we were a part of, our shared, connected, interdependent life. And the only way that we could really feel this interconnectedness, this oneness, was in the sharing, the giving away, the opening up, and the letting go. Buddhist writer Sharon Salzberg reminds us that this is what generosity actually is. It is an active choice to let go of our attachments, and to release ourselves, realizing that any holding on or hoarding that we're doing, we're just upholding a dualistic notion of life, a sense of division between ourselves and others. But in the giving way, we live into a deeper reality that everything is everyone's. There's nothing that's truly just ours. That there is so much more power and joy, hope and strength in living into that connectiveness, that sharing. There was one story of hope and generosity that I didn't tell that day, because I saved it to share here with you. It starts a couple of months ago at the end of the summer when a terrible thing had happened. White supremacists had marched openly with torches, protesters chanting Nazi slogans, and storming the streets of Charlottesville. You remember. Pain welled up across our nation, and that sense grew again that perhaps everything is lost. I was in my office. We were in the final stages of preparing for that sanctuary vote. You remember about that time. And one of you came to see me. You were heartbroken at Charlottesville, the way that hatred and just plain evil were gaining power. You wanted to do something about it. You'd been thinking about it. See, not too long before, your family had received a gift, and you found yourself with an unusually large sum of money, $100,000 to be exact. You'd never had that kind of money, and you'd probably never have it again. Like most of us, I'm sure you had many ideas immediately spring to mind about what you should do with that money, how you could spend it. But then this thing happened in Charlottesville, and it would have been so easy to take it all as evidence of all the ways that we're doomed, and you should just hunker down, close off, but you didn't do that. Instead, just like the woman in the story, you realized that this money was like a precious stone that would only really find its worth in the giving away. And so you came to see me. Because when you thought about the best way to make the biggest difference, to have the most impact on all those unleashed forces of hate, you thought about this congregation and our mission to unleash courageous love. And so, as you confess, the whole idea, this idea of just giving it away and giving it specifically to this church would feel so good and bring so much joy. So this is the story of hope and generosity I offer all of you today. It's a true story of generosity and hope, and it is our story. One among you received something surprising and precious, and there was this moment where they decided to just let it go, to give it away to support our mission and our partnership here, $100,000. It was given freely without any strings, just two hopes. The first was that it would be used to make an impact as directly as possible to further our mission and magnify our ministry, to remove some of any long-standing barriers and to set a foundation for our next leap forward. The board, in collaboration with the staff and the finance team, has already crafted a plan to begin to align with these hopes. But the second hope was that they'd hope that we'd use it to inspire others to discover their own generosity, which of course is why I saved this story for you today, in hopes that it would inspire all of us to find our own precious stone, whatever that may be, or when it comes our way, to invite us to imagine that we could simply give it away. It's amazing, right? I mean, take the story in. What it means for this community and our mission to be worthy of that sort of generosity, to be the thing that feels like it has the most hope of countering those forces. Because what I realize when I think about that is that if it weren't already true, if we weren't already giving of ourselves and being there for each other and the community and all the ways I listed earlier, and so many more, if we weren't already generous, then this gift wouldn't have happened. An ungenerous people does not inspire more generosity. Generosity grows generosity, and joy brings more joy. And also, I want us to take in that the source of this gift is right here. It's not some fancy donor with a foundation. It's not some closet billionaire that's been slyly flying under the radar. Just a regular old person that loves this place and who's committed to our mission and who received a gift and decided to give it to the church. So I want us to try something real quick. I want you to look back at that. You know the person you shared the conversation with earlier? I want you to turn to them right now and imagine that they are the person that gave the gift. Okay? Okay, and now I want you to imagine that you are the person that gave the gift. Right? Imagine you received this money and you just decided to share it. Just breathe in this generosity, this hope that is already everywhere, this huge energy and joy. Because what's powerful in all of this is that they didn't give a big gift, we did. I mean, one of you were right, right? One of you out there, you were talking to the right person. There's no they here, and there's no them that receives it. We receive it. It's all already here. It's our story. We together create what is possible, what joy, what goodness we're willing to share and receive, and what divisions we're going to refuse by our continued and growing generosity. So as we gather around tables in this coming week, my hope is that we'll each be generous with each other. Ask generous questions. Offer generous responses. As you pass the cranberries, let laughter overtake you and be not afraid of tears. Feel ourselves already filled with this richness, this deliciousness, this precious jewel of life. For all the blessings that we receive and see, let us hold them close. And when the time is right, let us turn to our hungry, aching world and let it all go, giving thanks as the joy grows. Amen. Blessed be.